Welcome to The Inner Game. I'm Gwen Garcelon, your host. Thanks for listening. The Inner Game is about how we nurture and attend to our mind, body, spirit health, and how that allows us to make a bigger contribution in the area of purpose that calls to us. Because these are times that are asking us to evolve beyond the systems and paradigms that are collapsing. And these are conversations with people who are committed to making an evolutionary difference with their lives from a place of balance and love and service. My guest today is author Tim Weed. He's a two-time winner of the Writer's Digest Annual Fiction Award, and his new novel, The Afterlife Project, is a finalist for the PRISM Prize in Climate Fiction and a New Scientist Best New Science Fiction Book of the Month. I recently met Tim at a book signing event and couldn't put his new book down. As a consultant and professional myself in the field of how do we rebuild a regenerative relationship with the natural world and function as a human species in the face of collapse of the unsustainable culture and systems we have built, I was fascinated by the scenario he explored in the Afterlife Project. So thanks for being on the show, Tim.
Oh, thanks for having me, Gwen. It's really great to be here.
You know, you've said that you are trying to contribute to a new mythology or a new destiny for humans because it's been a real missing in our culture. And I think part of the reason we're in the place that we're at. And I'd love for you to say more about that and why it's so important.
Well, I think that, just in terms of the context, I mean, I think as you kind of were getting at in your intro, we're in a place where the old mythologies have kind of failed us. It's like a carpet that's been pulled out from underneath us. We no longer have a kind of shared defining mythology as a species. And so I look at fiction. I mean, I love fiction. I've always been an avid reader of novels and stories. And I look at fiction as having the potential to contribute to the tapestry of a new mythology. And that's really what I was trying to do with my new novel.
And what are some of those, what's a piece of mythology or story that we have that you feel like is failing us?
Well, if you think about the defining mythology for a lot of recent human history, recent being the last 2,000 years or so, it's religion. It's Christianity and Islam and Judaism and those religions still exist, but they are not. It's not a shared reference. It's not as much of a shared kind of universal reference as it was before. And at the same time, we have science that explains mythologies kind of explain the world to us. It's a way that we explain ourselves to ourselves and explain what our lives mean. And I think that the era of having a shared mythology is kind of over for now. And so a lot of people find themselves without any kind of explanation of what their lives mean and why they're here and what are we supposed to be doing? What's our destiny as a species and things like that. And so I think that there's an opening or a real need for stories that that can help explain ourselves to ourselves and explain what we ought to be doing with our lives, what we ought to be doing as a species.
Do you feel like the American dream is a failed mythology? I feel like, all the consumption and all the measures of success are just at the end of their value.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with that. And I feel like we're really, I mean, as you also said in your very apt intro. I think we're at a time of real transition in America. We're kind of in a position where we're mourning, we're mourning what is being lost, what is being taken down. And we're sort of wondering what's going to be next.
Yeah. I sort of know, having read your book and talked to you a bit, what you think are going or need to be reclaimed values of a new mythology. Mm. But I'd love for you to say a little bit about what those are and and you know, how you, well, we can talk about the book in a minute, but
yeah. So I mean, for me, there's a recent book that came out called Sacred Nature by Karen Armstrong. I don't know if you've read that. There's also another book called Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer, and those kind of, for me, capture the new direction I think that we need to go as a species. I think that we have kind of evolved as a species and as a culture, seeing ourselves as separate from nature, above nature. We have, as a result of that, we have really kind of mercilessly exploited nature on this planet. And I think in order, and we're seeing the results. As I look out the window right now, the air is hazy with smoke from wildfires, and that's just one symptom. And so I think that we need to, for me, our destiny as a species is moving toward a more sacred view of nature, understanding gratitude toward nature, and sort of moving toward becoming the stewards of nature rather than the exploiters of nature. That would be a big paradigm shift for humanity. I think we're heading in that direction. I think it's a very important paradigm shift, and I'm, you know, and part of my writing is in a way trying to hurry that along.
Yeah, I'm so grateful for writers like you who are, you know, putting forth those visions and reminding us of those really core parts of our humanity, which, you know, are our inherent connection with the natural world, that there's no way we can be separate from that.
Yeah.
And we get into trouble when we are separate from that.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. In your book, I was really fascinated that the main character, you know, in the face of his loneliness, comes up with a new spirituality. And I'd love for you to talk a little bit about that and why you thought that was important to include.
Okay, great. So yeah, so there's two timelines. In one timeline, the main character is a microbiologist who's been sent into the deep future with the purpose of trying to see if there are any humans left alive. I mean, it's that's kind of his mission, is to survive, but also to see if anyone's left alive. But in the course of his, you know, this quest, he realizes that at least for now, he is very much alone, and he's separated from everyone that he ever knew by 10,000 years. And so loneliness is kind of an understatement, but the question that he faces is, okay, I'm alone for now, and what do I do? How do I maintain my sanity? And he somewhat consciously turns toward the idea of establishing his own spiritual practice, and it borrows, you know, from what he knows, which he knows some of the Native American practices. But he also, he's sort of consciously trying to set about creating a new form of animism. And so it leads him to some very interesting places, but he's you know, this new spiritual practice that he's doing is really for his own sanity. He's trying to keep from going insane. I think he realizes what a lot of humans have realized over the course of our history, that we need some kind of system to help explain ourselves to ourselves, and his system is very much about what we've been talking about, you know, trying to see himself as a part of the nature, you know, the ecosystem that he's in, and trying to see the sacredness in objects and in other species that surround him.
You know, it's an interesting thought that, you know, we are not whole or sane when we can't access that feeling of deep connectedness with whatever it is, whatever aliveness is around us. And I think that's probably what a lot of the mental health crisis is about right now, is not feeling, not having a mythology that tells us that, and has us experience that, we actually are connected, you know, that the unity consciousness that's really at the center of most world wisdom traditions.
Yeah, I mean, we're very separated from from nature and from our connection to nature. We're separated as a result of you know, our historical and cultural evolution, but even more so now as a result of our technology and the way that we live. So many people, it's troubling and tragic, but so many people don't look up from their screens and spend time outside with trees and you know, birds. And I think there are a lot of people who do include that in their lives. And again, that's something that I'm trying to portray pretty strongly in my fiction as well.
Mm. I wonder if you've called on any of the mythology that that Starhawk writes about in one of my favorite books, The Fifth Sacred Thing.
I have not read that. I will have to put that on my reading list.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Your book, you know, really brought up for me what I loved in Starhawk's book. I'll read you just one of my favorite quotes. In the book, she says, "Only in freedom can that fifth sacred thing we call spirit flourish in its diversity. To honor the sacred is to create conditions in which nourishment, sustenance, habitat, knowledge, freedom, and beauty can thrive. To honor the sacred is to make love possible."
Wonderful.
I know. Isn't that
gorgeous? You know, it's interesting to me because that is beautiful. And it's interesting because there are a whole bunch of books coming out that are sort of the two that I mentioned, but there are many more that are coming out with these messages. Have you ever heard the term consilience?
No.
Okay, so this is a word that was introduced to me by a friend of mine who's an artist. And he talked about the way that different evolutions in human knowledge take place sort of in parallel, and they emerge at around the same time. And the example that he used was Darwin. When Darwin was writing The Origin of Species, there was another guy, Wallace, in Indonesia, writing something very, very similar, and they had no knowledge of each other, but they were writing this very profound new theory at the same time, and I think so. That's consilience, and I think that that's the way that a lot of kind of human discoveries and paradigm shifts and philosophies and things like that evolve. So it really does feel like we're in, because we're seeing all these books that come out with these wonderful messages that are kind of, you know, they seem to be converging on the sense of what, you know, just what you just meant. The one you just read was a great a summary of it.
Yeah.
It's wonderful to see.
Yeah. Well, let me just take a quick break and say this is Gwen Garcelon, and you're listening to The Inner Game on KDNK. My guest today is author Tim Weed, whose new book, The Afterlife Project, is a moving novel about reconnecting to sacred nature and the role that that plays in the future of the human species, which could be meeting its end on this planet. But we don't know that. And what we seem to all feel called to is to evolve in our expression of love and our expression of connectivity to each other and to the natural world, and to be guided by that in how we move forward at this point. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your own spiritual relationship with nature and kind of how that has evolved and opened over the past few years.
Yeah, so I've been a seeker for a long time in a way. And I think that, you know, fiction has been one of my ways of seeking. But nature has been another one. So I've always been very, very oriented toward the outdoors, and, you know, I'm a skier and, you know, I like to hike and camp and, you know, there's a certain feeling that you get in the wilderness, especially when you've been in a wilderness area for more than three or four nights in a row camping. You start to feel that kind of vibe, mm-hmm. where you're feeling this kind of the vibration of nature. You're feeling like you're part of it. It's a really one way that this has happened to me is on a river trip. So we did a river trip to the Gates of Lodore in Utah, and 4 days on the river, no screens, and you start to feel, and then by the time that fourth or fifth day comes along, you're like, oh, I don't want to leave. I'm just feeling so good. I'm feeling so connected.
Absolutely.
So that has been something that has been, to me, has been really, you know, that has been a huge part of my spiritual quest has been in nature. But I've worked, one of my other jobs, besides being a writer, is doing international cultural travel programs and international education programs. And I spent a lot of time in Cuba. So I've had some experience with Santeria. I've had some encounters with some very powerful Santera priestesses and Baba Laos, the male priest, and have gotten so part of my spiritual evolution has been from that, from meeting with them and understanding the power of that. And then over the last couple of years, I've also been spending time in Oaxaca doing research for a book that's actually coming out next year. And interacting with curanderas who are participating they're sort of carrying on the tradition, the long tradition of Mesoamerican spirituality and healing. And so that has really contributed a lot to my, and so it's sort of like I'm doing a little of what the character in my book does, is that I'm kind of assembling my own spiritual beliefs because there's no organized religion that I really feel called to or feel identify with. And so I'm sort of piecing together my own very particular religion, and it is a kind of animism, and it borrows from these traditions, but it also borrows very much from my own kind of direct knowledge of nature and daily experience of that. So, I mean, that's sort of a summary. Mm. It's not very organized, but that's where I am.
I know.
It's
always
a work in progress.
Yeah. As life is in human evolution, always a work in progress. I'm always fascinated by the practices, sort of the daily containers that we can create that help us to keep moving along our own path and keep centered in what we value most and all of that. What does that look like for you on a daily basis?
Well, I have... in my workspace, I have a little shrine that is basically, the shrine consists of a lot of things I've collected, stones, feathers, shells, driftwood, things that have particular meaning for me, fossils, and photos of my ancestors, you know, of ancestors that I particularly value, and some things having to do with the shamanism that I've encountered in Latin America and things like that. So I do kind of check in with that, not every day, but often. And also I spend a lot of time outside. I try to spend time outside in kind of a, not a formal meditation, but in kind of an informal meditation. For example, earlier today, I took a bike ride and I went and swam in this very hidden little brook, a nice little pool that was very cold. And I sort of sat there and tried to bond with the spirits of water. So I have... And again, I have this kind of nascent system of animism where I focus on the four directions, and each direction has emotional meaning for me. And there's a form of healing to be had in contemplating each of these directions and the colors and the objects and the sort of mythological figures associated with that. I also have a bunch of guardian spirits that I kind of, you know, invoke. Your invocation was very nice at the beginning of this show. But yeah, so I just try to do that, but it's very improvisational, very private and particular to me. And this is something that I learned from Santeria, actually. In Cuba, 70% of the population practice Santeria, but it's not a formal religion. It's a household religion. They all have shrines in their house. And what's wonderful about Santeria is you don't have to do anything to join. You don't have to go, you can just identify yourself as, you know, with a particular one of their deities, the Orishas, and set up a shrine and just kind of interact. And each Orisha has correspondences in the natural world. So I'm kind of following that model where it's a made up spiritual practice that's just my own. And most of it takes place outside in nature.
Hmm. You know, isn't that beautiful? I mean, and doesn't that make sense that there's nothing you have to do to join with spirit, except to just open your heart and have that intention.
Yeah,
you know,
and clear your mind.
There's no,
and be open to it.
All the hoops that we feel like we have to jump through are man-made.
Exactly. We don't need an expert to tell us. We can actually figure it out for ourselves how to make that connection with nature, or, you know, with deities, or with whatever energy you believe is out there and worth connecting to. Because for me, it's definitely out there. It's just a question of how you connect to it.
Yeah. And I always love to hear what people are grappling with, you know, sort of what's a growth edge for you on your path right now, that, yeah, something that you're trying to heal, or something that's been really beneficial, or.
Yeah. So, well, right now, you know, for the last, for the last couple months, several months, I've been really focused on promoting this novel, getting it out into the world. And it's been, in many ways, it's been a fun process. There have been some great and very rewarding interactions with people. It's just been wonderful to hear from readers and everything else. But I'm really actually getting to the point where I'm like, it's very outward focused. It's focused on social media, media in general, you know, very, very much focused on kind of external affirmation. And I'm actually feeling very exhausted by that, and I'm ready to go to turn inward again. So it's turning inward, and actually, it's really good timing. Just yesterday, I got an editorial letter about my next book, and an editorial letter. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but it's a thing you hate to receive in a way, because it's from your editor, and it's like, okay, this is all the things you have to do, and you're like, but it's not really. I thought it was done. And so I'm sort of at that point where I have to go back into this novel that's going to be coming out in May and kind of reimmerse myself in the dream of it, re-inhabit the vivid dream of this novel. And so it's actually, now that I've gotten over the shock of it, it's like, okay, this is telling me that I need this now time to turn back inward, which is where I'm really comfortable in terms of the writing process. So it is, you know, ending the external affirmation, going back into internal affirmation, which is a place where I'm a lot more comfortable.
And what does that look like? Do you have sort of a ritual where you can get into that internal space more easily?
Well, my ritual is basically writing. For me, the process of writing, when I wake up, one of the first things, I grab a cup of, I don't drink coffee, but I grab a cup of mushroom elixir, and I head out to my writing studio, my writing space, and I write. And it's right in the morning when I'm still close to the dream world. It's the time that I'm most productive. And then I just, during the day, I sort of alternate that with breakfast, with going outside, doing something outside. With, you know, going back in and writing. So I do a whole bunch of sessions during the day, and it does wonders for my sanity. It's, you know, to feel that level of immersion when I'm in a story, when I'm writing a story, I feel in the zone. You know, I forget, I don't have any thoughts. I just forget where I am. And for me, I guess that's probably the most important ritual of my day, in addition to getting outside, just writing.
When we've talked before, you've mentioned these protector spirits or muses, and I'm wondering if you invoke those when you get stuck, or, you know, I feel like there's so much support that we can invoke from the unseen world that sometimes people forget or feel shy to ask for that kind of help or support or allyship.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting that you mentioned that, because I've been thinking about that recently. I tend to do that. I tend to invoke those protector spirits when I'm embarking on a new project, or embarking on an important aspect of a new project, or when I'm simply outside and wanting to meditate. I don't, on a daily basis, at least not yet, I haven't evokes them every day, but I do when I will be doing it soon, because I'll be jumping into this project. So it's a way to sort of touch base and call on the spirits, you know, for help and support and, you know, good vibes. Yeah.
Is there something that you'd like to say about the Afterlife Project that we haven't touched on? That you'd like people to know?
Well, I mean, I guess I would say that, I mean, it's considered to be, it has been categorized as climate fiction, and in some ways it is climate fiction. When you read the premise, or you think about the book, it has aspects of darkness. It's definitely a dark story, but I don't consider it to be a pessimistic story. I, You know, it's a story about geological time and, you know, the future of the human species, possible human extinction and things. These are big topics. But to me, it's also a story about the persistence of nature and the fact that life on this planet is going to continue and we are part of it. And so that we're, I guess my main message in the book is that we're part of it. We are inseparable from it. And it is, you know, and again, as we spoke about before, it is, we are reaching the point where it's really time to take on the mantle of our destiny as a species, which I really believe is being the stewards of planetary nature rather than the exploiters.
And do you feel like...
But I know what I was going to say. I said it was sort of dark and stuff. Like I also wanted to say, it's really... My real intention was also just to write an immersive and good story, because I think that's how you get these things across. And so I want people to have fun, and I think they do have fun when they read it.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm up against, of course, you know, this these dark topics all day long every day. And so it's almost the water that I swim in, but I didn't experience the book as particularly dark. It was actually really a beautiful love story, and not only a love story with nature, but you know, the love that humans express with each other, which I feel like is just such a beautiful part of who we are.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad that you got it. I really feel like you get them, and I am getting that from readers too. I was a little worried because some readers are like, oh, it's so dark, but they tend to be people who haven't been thinking in the areas that you and I have. But I'm so glad that was your experience with the book, because that was the intention.
Oh, yay. Well, thank you so much for this conversation, Tim. It's been wonderful to get to know you, and I'm looking forward to reading your other works. And if any of you listeners are interested in deepening your own relationship with sacred nature and the healing that is available on the land and through the land, I'm hosting a retreat September 5th through the 8th here in the Aspen area. You can find more about that on my website, which is gwengarcelon.com. That's GwenGarcelon.com. I'd love to share this very special experience with you. And until next time.
Amazing.
Yeah, it really is. Oh, my God. I mean, getting to, like you say, have that time to really start to resonate at the frequency of the earth is a miracle.
Oh, amazing. One of these days I will do one. It sounds beautiful.
Good. Well, until next time, go read Tim's book, The Afterlife Project, and open yourself to all the possibilities for the future.
Thank you so much for having me, Gwen.
You bet.